This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the world, worldwide, live. Great to be with you, and I'm continuing today on sharing with you, by spoken word, the first chapter of Jewish supremacism. So this is going to be part two. I left off discussing the fact that I read about some very highly controversial and amazing documents from the United States National Archives. I wrote my congressman, I received the documents in the mail, and now you will shortly discover what those documents were all about. It changed my view of history, and ultimately, it changed my life. Here it is. The documents were from the National Archives. They concerned intelligence reports from foreign governments and extensive reports from our own intelligence officers in Russia during the time of the early days of the Communist Revolution and the Russian Civil War. The early 1920s were long before the establishment of the OSS and the CIA. The U.S. Army ran our intelligence international network at the time. One of our military intelligence officers in Russia during the revolutionary period was Captain Montgomery Schuyler. He sent back regular reports to the Chief of Staff of the U.S. Army Intelligence Office, who then relayed them to the Secretary of War and to the President of the United States. Reading through the lengthy reports gave me a glimpse into an historical period of which few Americans are aware. They reported horrible massacres of thousands of Russian aristocrats and intelligentsia murdered simply because they could provide effective leadership, opposition to the communists. Many Americans are at least somewhat aware of Stalin's murder of millions. However, many millions also died in the early days of Bolshevism under Lenin and Trotsky. For it was these men who initiated the first mass killings and the creation of the gulags. The reports also stated without equivocation the Jewish nature of the revolution. In one of Schuyler's official reports, declassified in 1958, that's almost 50 years after he wrote and dispatched them, he states, "It's probably unwise to say this loudly in the United States, but the Bolshevik movement is and has been, since its beginning, guided and controlled by Russian Jews of the greasiest type." In quoting the graphic language of this official report, my intention is not to offend. But Schuyler's report says what it says, whether we like it or not. In another report written 4 months later, Captain Schuyler goes on to quote the evidence of Robert Wilton, who then was the chief Russian correspondent of the authoritative London Times. Wilton later went on to pen a number of best-selling books about the revolution, including the widely acclaimed Russia's Agony and the famous book The Last Days of the Romanovs. On June 9, 1919, Schuyler cites Wilton as follows. "A table made up in 1918 by Robert Wilton, correspondent of the London Times in Russia, shows at that time that there were 384 commissars, including two Negroes, 13 Russians, 15 Chinamen, 22 Armenians, and more than 300 Jews. Of the latter number, 264 had come from the United States since the downfall of the imperial government." There was, of course, no reason to impugn the reporting of the Times or Captain Schuyler. I couldn't believe my eyes as I scanned the papers dispersed across the plastic tablecloth on my dining room table. I wondered how it could be possibly true that the Russian Revolution had only 13 ethnic Russians out of 384 members of its top governing body. Churchill's description of gripping the Russian people by the hair of their heads came to life in the pages I received from our own National Archives. Once I started checking out the leads I would glean from my reading, the National Archives kept providing me with the most incredible documents. Not only did our chief intelligence officer write to the President of the United States about the Jewish nature of communism, so did our U.S. ambassador to Russia, David R. Francis. In a January 1918 cable to our government, he reported, quote, "The Bolshevik leaders here, most of whom are Jews and 90% of whom are returned exiles, care little for Russia or any other country, but are internationalists, and they are trying to start a worldwide social revolution." That was from David Francis, American ambassador to Russia at the time of the revolution. The National Archives also sent me copies from its files of communications from Scotland Yard and British Intelligence. The Directorate of British Intelligence sent to America and other nations a lengthy report dated July 16, 1919, on Bolshevism around the world. It was called, quote, "A Monthly Review of the Progress of Revolutionary Movements Abroad." This lengthy report lists the communist movements in the major nations of the world. The first sentence in the first paragraph on the first page of this British government official report bluntly states that Jews control international communism. Quote, "There is now definite evidence that Bolshevism is an international movement controlled by Jews." Unquote. Years later, as a student at Louisiana State University, I took a course entirely devoted to the Russian Revolution. Neither my professor in his lectures nor my textbook, The Soviet Achievement, made any mention of the historical Jewish-Russian conflict and the Jewish domination of the Communist Party. The Jewish role in the Communist Revolution was, however, mentioned in many major Jewish publications, such as the Jewish Encyclopedia and the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia. It astounded me to find them actually boasting about the pivotal role of Jews in the Russian Revolution. They even pointed out the effort of the communist Jews to disguise the Jewish role, a successful effort, for most Gentiles in America and Europe are still unaware of it. And here's a quote. "The communist movement and ideology played an important part in Jewish life, particularly in the 1920s, 30s, and during and after World War II. Individual Jews played an important role in the early stages of Bolshevism and the Soviet regime. The great attraction of communism among Russian and later also Western Jewry emerged only with the establishment of the Soviet regime in Russia. Many Jews the world over therefore regarded the Soviet concept of the solution to the Jewish question as an intrinsically positive approach. Communism became widespread in virtually all Jewish communities. In some countries, Jews became the leading element in the legal and illegal communist parties, and in some cases were even instructed by the Communist Internationale to change their Jewish-sounding names and pose as non-Jews in order not to confirm right-wing propaganda that presented communism as an alien Jewish conspiracy." Unquote. Trotsky's book, and that's, again, from one of the Jewish encyclopedias. Again, go to my book, Jewish Supremacism, and you can find the documentation and citation, and you can look up these quotes for yourselves. Trotsky's book, Stalin, written in exile, attempted to show that Stalin had played only an insignificant role in the early days of the communist takeover. Trotsky attempted to illustrate this point by reproducing a postcard widely circulated in the months following the revolution. The postcard depicted the six leaders of the revolution. Shown are Lenin, who was at least one quarter Jewish, spoke Yiddish in his home, and was married to a Jewess. Trotsky, real name Lev Bronstein. Zinoviev, real name Hirsch Apfelbaum. Lunacharsky, a Gentile. Kamenev, real Jewish name Rosenfeld. And Sverdlov, Jewish. Not only does the postcard show the Jewish domination of the revolution, it also illustrates the fact that the communist Jewish leaders shown had changed their names, presumably to disguise the fact that they were Jews, just as reported in the Encyclopedia Judaica. Although the fact of Lenin's Jewish ancestry was kept quiet for many years, Jewish writers are now taking note of it. David Shub, author of Lenin, a biography, stated in a letter to the Russian immigrant paper Neue Journal that Lenin's mother was Jewish, at least on her father's side, and probably so on her mother's side as well. In addition, a French Jewish periodical, Revue de Fonds Social Youth, reported that a Soviet novelist, Marietta Shargionian was prevented by Soviet censorship from publishing evidence of Lenin's Jewish ancestry. A number of Jewish publications in recent years have disclosed Lenin's Jewish heritage, including the Jewish Chronicle. I have in the book a facsimile from the Jewish Chronicle, July 26, 1991. The headline is Moscow Magazine on Lenin's Jewish Roots. The Cheka, or secret police, had a Jew, Mosef Uritsky, as its first chief. Most of the other subsequent leaders were also Jews, including Sverdlov and Gingrich Yagoda, which is Russian for Yehuda, the Jew, who presided over the programs that killed millions of Christians. The Soviet propaganda minister during the war was a Jew, Ilya Ehrenberg, who notoriously distinguished himself by his Second World War exhortations to Soviet troops to rape and murder the women and children of Germany. Anatole Goldberg quoted Ehrenberg in his book Ilya Ehrenberg as saying, quote, "The Germans are not human beings. Nothing gives us so much joy as German corpses," unquote. The Communist Secret Police, which underwent many name changes, including Cheka, OGPU, GPU, NKVD, NKGB, MGB, and KGB, was the most feared police agency in the history of the world. They imprisoned, tortured, or murdered more than 30 million Russians and East Europeans. Even the more conservative Soviet historians of the 1960s were placing the number of murdered at about 20 to 40 million, figures that do not include the millions more who were dispossessed, imprisoned, exiled, tortured, and displaced. Nobel Prize winner Alexander Solzhenitsyn, in his opus, The Gulag Archipelago, using the research of a Soviet statistician who had access to secret government files, I.A. Kurganov, estimated that between 1918 and 1959, at least 66 million died at the hands of the communist rulers of Russia. Although that number may be far too high, in Gulag Archipelago 2, Solzhenitsyn affirms that Jews created and administered the organized Soviet concentration camp system in which tens of millions of Christians died. Pictured on page 79 of Gulag Archipelago 2 are the leading administrators of the greatest killing machine in the history of the world. They are Aaron Soltz, Yakov Rapoport, Lazar Kogan, Matvei Berman, Gingrich Yagoda, and Naftali Frankel. All six are Jews. Interestingly enough, during this period of murder and mayhem, Jews were a protected class, so much so that the Communist Party took the unprecedented step of making expressions of anti-Semitism a counter-revolutionary offense and thus punishable by death. A Jewish voice in January 1942 stated, quote, "The Jewish people will never forget that the Soviet Union was the first country and is yet the only country in the world in which anti-Semitism is a crime." The Congress Bulletin, publication of the American Jewish Congress, stated, "Anti-Semitism was classed as counter-revolution, and the severe punishments meted out for acts of anti-Semitism were the means by which the existing order protected its own safety." I ought to quote that one again. "Anti-Semitism was classed as counter-revolution, and the severe punishments meted out for the acts of anti-Semitism were the means by which the existing order protected its own safety." That's from a publication of the American Jewish Congress. The Russian penal codes in 1922 and 27 even went so far as to make anti-Semitism punishable by death. The book Soviet Russia and the Jews by Gregor Aronson and published by the American Jewish League Against Communism quotes Stalin remarking on the policy in an interview in 1931 with the Jewish Telegraph Agency. Quote, "Communists cannot be anything but outspoken enemies of anti-Semitism. We fight anti-Semites by the strongest methods in the Soviet Union. Active anti-Semites are punished by death under law." Well, folks, that's the end of part 2 of the first chapter of Jewish supremacism And tomorrow we'll begin with the beginnings of an ethnic war, the ethnic war that drove the Russian Revolution, and an ethnic war that has a huge consequence on today's events, not just in the Middle East and the United States, but all over the world. Please, you have the internet, you have a great access to millions of people all over the world. I hope that you use it. I hope you bring this message all over the world and just continue to tell the truth to friends and family. Help wake them up to the great danger of Jewish extremism and supremacism. Until tomorrow, this has been David Duke. I'll see you then.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.